Blog Talk Radio.
With Merle, and I'm your host, Merle Exit. It's 3 o'clock, 3 p.m. here in New York City and Queens, and it's a nice sunny day, not too hot, probably a good beach day, but I'm going to sit in the house. And I got work to do, including this radio show, which we're looking forward to. And this is all about, it's something called the Telly Award. It's the 35th annual Telly Award. And we have one person, the film director, Jason Figuera. Well, he'll tell me when he comes on. He copped the bronze for a documentary that's titled Access, Democracy in a Digital Age. I don't know what it's about. I guess he'll tell us. And his co-producer will also be on to tell us, Anthony Saldana. And so we'll talk with them. But first, a word from our sponsor. Yeah.
What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies. And that's no fairy tale.
And you can get these absolutely best delicious brownies at www.brownies.com. I think I'm going to have to make, I don't have any brownies. I'm going to make chocolate pudding from scratch. Right after the radio show. But in the meantime, we got our two guests on, and I'm going to open up their mic. Hello, guys. How are you?
How are you?
Hi. How are you doing?
How's it going? Thank you for having us on your show, Merle.
Oh, this is going to be
weird.
So, first, Jason, tell
yes,
me
ma'am.
What exactly is a Telly Award?
Well, the Telly Awards are a national award that's given out every year. And basically, it's out of, I believe, Anthony, it's 11,000, as you said, right, filmmakers?
Yeah,
out of 11,000 who have entered, they give a first and second place. The first place gets a silver, and the second place gets a bronze. And they have different categories that you can enter. So, for example, you have an information category. You have an education category, one about documentary, and those are the three that I had won.
One interesting thing about this award show is that we're not in competition with the other entrants. We're based solely on our content. And so they give out multiple bronze and silver awards.
Oh, that's great. Is this a national thing?
Yes.
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay. So are you the only person in Queens that got this award?
Well, I don't know about the other entrants. They don't really tell you. They'll tell you their name. They don't tell you where they're from, though. So I would love to know where they're from. But, you know, I don't know if I'm the only person in Queens who's gotten some. I know Anthony has gotten a few of his own. He's another person in Queens I know that has gotten tele awards of his own.
Yeah.
Well, I'm saying this particular year.
Right.
This year, I'm not sure if anyone else in Queens did get any. And if there are, you know, I'd love it if they tell me, you know, because I would love to talk to them. We'd love to meet up with people, you know, like-minded filmmakers.
Yeah, well, I'm guessing that if because a PR firm sent me the info. So I'm guessing that if there were more than one, they might have said so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now let's go into what exactly is this film about?
Well, this film, as its title, Access Democracy in a Digital Age, is exactly about that. Access, rather public access television. If you remember from the early 80s, when even the late 70s, when cable was first coming up in the United States, cable companies had a huge dilemma, and the thing is, they wanted to run cable wires through private property, and a lot of people were like, no, because they're going to make money off of something that's on their property. You know, the cable companies were
right.
So the cable companies were thinking, well, how are we going to get people to get more subscribers? How are we going to get them to say yes to this? And one of the pioneers for that, there were multiple pioneers. One of them I talked to was Professor George Stoney, who recently passed away at NYU, who had done work in Canada of a similar nature. He would help, I remember one documentary he produced, VTR C'est Jacques, which was funded by the Canadian government as a program called Challenge for Change. And he went to a Canadian ghetto, per se, and the members there had set up their own, the members of that community had set up their own clinic, and they wanted to tell people about it, but they weren't sure how to do it. So he went in there with his group and showed them how to use film equipment to get the message out. And later on, fast forward, he would bring this idea later on to cable companies and say, hey, why don't you give people four channels of their own, you know, multiple channels that they can use for their own devices, communities. You know, local communities and empower them. You have to give something back to the community if you want something from them. And cable companies at the time agreed to it because they were looking for subscribers. And this thus started the birth of public access in the United States. However, he wasn't the only pioneer. There are multiple people. Red Burns, there was something about Midwest Video, if I remember from one of the articles I had read. Bill Olson had a great article on public access television. You can go there, and he maps out their entire history. It's amazing how long this idea for independent media in the hands of citizens has gone on since the times of Robert Flaherty, you know, who was a great documentary filmmaker. This idea has been pioneered throughout film, and so basically, we have public access television today. What the film outlines, though, is not just the history, but the fact that recently public access stations were actually shut down because phone companies began to realize that cable companies were getting into the phone game. I don't know if you're familiar, Merle, with the bundle packages they offer you on television.
You mean, oh, okay.
Like, you know how you get
phone, internet.
Yeah,
in other words, when I'm
internet.
Like, I have BIOS, and I get a...
Right. Well, Verizon is
about?
One of those companies. Right, Verizon is a phone company, and it basically works like this. The cable companies at that time were beginning to offer phone and internet services. They're beginning to bundle things together. And the phone company said, well, you're not going to step into Ma Bell's territory. So they wanted to bundle their own packages. So they wanted to get into television now. They wanted to start offering cable, you know, like Verizon. So what they did was they wanted to lift the FCC ruling because when George Stoney had first advocated for this, Red Burns and so many others had advocated for it, they worked with the FCC to create rules for public access. It was a mandate by the FCC that cable companies had to provide public access channels. Well, the phone companies did not want that. They wanted to make everything QVC, everything, you know, selling products, sell, sell, sell. They didn't want that nonsense. So they decided that they wanted the rules lifted for them. And
right.
They would go straight to the national Congress. They would go through national means and try to do it. But they got stalled because not all the senators agreed. It was moving very slow. It wasn't moving at the pace they wanted. So they had another idea. Their plan B was to go state by state through local governments and get these laws lifted. And that's where they started succeeding. And one of the states, surprisingly, as I said in the documentary, was California. And places like Sacramento had suffered losses of public access stations. Some producers would go up to their public access stations one day, and all of a sudden they're greeted with a padlock on the door. You know, no more funding for equipment, no more funding to keep the operations up. It was just closed. So this kind of attitude towards public access, this kind of shutting down of the stations across the country became very big. And the public access stations did try to make congressional hearings out of this, and they did succeed. There were members of Congress who did want to hear them, and they would hold hearings. But there are times when even the phone companies just didn't show up. They couldn't be bothered.
Mm.
You know, and that was the problem. And still today, we're fighting this battle. It's an ongoing battle. But the film doesn't just show the crazy side of public access. And this is what I wanted to talk about, too. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen public access, Merle, in the early days, in the 80s, you know, like when you had Coca Crystal. You know, people on MNN, Manhattan Neighborhood Network, you had the funny producers, you had people who would even do shows naked.
Right.
You know?
I had gone to the studios I saw in Flushing.
Yes, Queens Public Television.
Queens Public Television, right.
And actually that was very weird because I just had a flashback. Do you remember Joe Franklin? Joe Franklin's Memory Lane. Do you know who he is?
I vaguely remember that. I had heard someone talking about his show.
This guy's been around for like God knows how many years. He did mostly he would be a TV and radio, and it was like his show. He was the one who established the first talk show, and he's still
right.
around. But he has a son, and God, and, you know, it could have been 20, 30 years ago, I think. And for whatever reason, his son wanted to do something on public TV. And the only thing I had ever known was QPTV.
Huh.
And
yeah.
So I never saw this. And, I mean, you would think with all people went on Joe Franklin's show to be seen. That every star that you have ever known has been on his show. And he calls me up and he says to me, Brad is doing his first show on cable.
Right.
And
right.
I said,
right.
Yeah. And he said, and he wants you and I as his guests. And I'm going, okay. Which I thought was hysterical because I was thinking to myself, of all the people in the world that you can get who would want to do. I don't know why you're asking, but fine. It's like when people say, ask me to do something, I go, yeah, okay. You know? But that was the first time that other than something that I was experiencing something that had to do with cable, a cable TV program. And I think there was a lot of it in Manhattan. Manhattan was bigger on cable TV as opposed to the cable, I guess, I don't know if it was even the same, that QPTV was the same, with just a different channel. I'm not sure.
It's funny, all these channels in New York City are so different, but they have so many vibrant characters. George Stone, you know, he started out and, you know, he brought it to Manhattan. So a lot of the Manhattan Neighborhood Network was, you know, its foundations were of George Stone, as well as majority of, like, public access, you know, comes back to
mm-hmm.
him. You know, our backgrounds, just as filmmakers, we went to Queens College, and we were interns at Queens Public Television, and
mm-hmm.
From there I went over to Bronx Net Television, and we got a lot of our education in television and filmmaking from the public access community. And I thought that was really important to bring into the film, that, you know, there are a lot of interesting personalities that you're going to find out and find on these public access stations, a lot of controversial, you know, voices, but there's a lot of education that you can get from public access that you wouldn't get on your, well, I mean, it's harder to find on local, on your cable provider. For example, Queens is one of the most diverse places, I mean, like, boroughs in, like, it's the most diverse place in the world, really. Like, you could get so many different cultures right here in Queens. And there's so many shows on Queens Public Television to represent those cultures. Besides that, we did get to film in the project a gentleman by the name of Andrew Bauman. And he does a show called Spotlight Autism. And, Jason, you could tell him more about.
Yeah, well, that's what I was trying to explain before, was that public access was known for having all these crazy people, you know, doing all these outlandish things. But, well, you'd have one that actually, as I said, there was one back in the 80s, and I think it's still going on today, I'm not sure. It's a Let's Paint and Exercise TV, which is like they do the show naked, you know. There have been elements where Coca Crystal, it talks about drug use and things like that. You know, it gets into elements that are unfavorable in mainstream media. You even have people like the Ku Klux Klan putting on programs of their own in certain communities, which really riled up a lot of protests. And it's understandable why. Those are very controversial subjects. But public access just doesn't just favor those producers. There's another side to public access, which is the community side. This is a place where local government meetings can be filmed and put up. You can have shows about people who are disabled and done by people who are disabled.
Right.
You know, We have Disability Viewpoints with Mark Hughes, for example. We were recently on his show, and he has a disability, and he hosts that show. He appears on the camera and helps produce the show, you know, talks with the guests, and it's amazing that these people who wouldn't be otherwise seen in mainstream media can get their point of view across, and that's really amazing about public access. It's not just the kookiness of it.
Right.
It's a community service aspect. You know, groups who normally don't get heard. And I'd like to mention that one of those groups was ACT UP, especially back in the 80s during the AIDS crisis. They had used public access a lot. And they still, and most of their video activists are still around today and can tell you, you know, how much they've used that medium to get their demonstrations out there, to show on video, you know, how the AIDS community was cracked down on by police when they tried to demonstrate, you know, and especially for gay rights. You know, that's groups like those have long since used public access for advocating and for getting their
mm-hmm.
point of view across. The public access is in and of itself the very essence of the First Amendment right in the United States of America.
That's true, because it's one way of communication.
It is.
But, you know, it's interesting because now with the internet, it's like when somebody's like having an internet radio show, there's no you can do whatever you want and say whatever you want now.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's very true. But you know, I don't think that it'll mean the death of public access. It could be a more of a, it'll help it. It'll work together. Like you could put, we were on a show called Open in the Bronx, and we're on every so often, and by the time we were home, that show was online and had about 200 views.
Uh-huh.
So,
and that was, I mean, a radio show?
No, it's BronxNet's premier news morning program called Open.
Oh, okay. That's not the thing, the Channel 12, is it?
No, that's News 12. It's actually BronxNet.
Oh, okay.
Television.
So I want to get back to this to the documentary. How long is it, by the way?
The documentary is approximately 25 minutes long.
Okay,
and
can we get access to it? Anybody? Can we see it somewhere? And
yes, I'll be posting it on my YouTube channel. I have a YouTube channel, Inspire Studios INT International, and I'll be posting it up there. I actually have it on a private mode because I was showing it to some people, but I definitely have a trailer up there, public, that I have made. It's called Access Democracy in a Digital Age. Or if you search Access Promo Trailer via YouTube, you can find it. You can also find some of my work. I know Anthony is going to upload it on his channel, Anthony Saldana. If you search his YouTube channel, some of our work has been uploaded there.
Yes.
And, you know, I can send him the trailer, and he'll definitely upload it there. But I have my trailer up on my channel. So if you just search Access Democracy in a Digital Age, you can find it.
Now, but would I be able to, you said you only have it private on YouTube already?
Well, the whole
already?
Film I have private right now. My trailer is public.
No, I don't mean the trailer. If I wanted to see the whole thing to, you know, comment on it as well, so when I'm doing the article,
right now it's not fully up on YouTube. I have it up on Vimeo too, but it's password protected. As I said, I was sending this out with Anthony to I didn't have it out as yet. So after I won the awards, I said, okay, I gotta make it public. So what I'm gonna do tonight is share it with Anthony, and we're gonna try to make it public. Okay.
Okay.
And I'm gonna make it public
online. I wanted to be able to, if possible, to see this, so I can also, in the article, comment on it.
We want you to.
Yeah,
we want you to.
Of course. Yeah. And I'm gonna make it public from my channel. And of course, we're gonna send it to you, and you can share with anybody else you want, because it'll be public tonight.
Oh, okay. So by tonight, I'll be able to do it then.
Oh yeah.
Oh, okay. That'll be cool.
Yeah.
This way I get a more sense of what the documentary is showing.
Right.
Now, is this the first, brother, is this your first Telly Award?
I can answer that question.
Yeah.
It's actually not our first Telly Award. We
do you work together? Is that what's going to happen?
Yes, we do.
Yes.
Oh,
definitely.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
On all things.
Primarily.
Basically. So in other words, do you write these as well as direct them?
I write some of them, or we switch off on different, depending on whose idea it is, they'll be the writer and the director for that project. So for example, Access, I wrote and produced for my thesis film for Hofstra University. That was to get my MFA. Originally, that's why I created the film. And Anthony, for his film about the blind,
I directed a documentary called We're Ordinary People, and it came out 2 years ago. And this is one of the funniest things about our journey, really, is that we got out of Queens College, and Jason got into Hofstra University. And I got a job, and about a year later, Jason goes, oh, well, I want to do my thesis film on public access television. And I said, well, I want to do a documentary about blind people. So we pretty much helped each other out, and I helped him with Access Democracy in a Digital Age, and he, you know, really, really helped me make War Ordinary People. 2 years ago, the documentary War Ordinary People won 3 Telly Awards and a Hometown Media Award. So
that's cool.
So we've been working together to create these films, and as I was saying, the way we work is, as in Anthony's case, he came up with that idea. You know, he wanted to film people who are blind, and I supported him with that. So he wrote and directed it, and I helped him produce it. I helped him film it and everything, you know.
Right.
And I came up with the idea of Access Democracy in the Digital Age, and he helped me produce and film the documentary. So depending on whose idea it is, you know, we give that person the credit,
right?
And we help each other out. That's how it
and,
is.
And we've been through so much just to get these two projects out. It's funny how things work out.
Oh, my God.
Like, when we made World Ordinary People, the first documentary we did, at one point I fell and broke my arm. It's like, oh, but we got production next week. Well, we have to stop that. I have to get better. And like three months later, I was like, all right, Jason, we can go filming again. And we went out, we filmed it, we finished the project. And right before I was about to debut on television, I had to have surgery. So I was just like, all right, Jason, well, I'm having surgery. We have to push back the debut another 2 months. Like, don't worry, man. Get better.
Yeah,
so,
we wanted you alive for that.
Right.
We didn't want you to die for your debut.
I was like, all right, well, I get the surgery, and we'll debut it in 2 months. So I had the surgery, and we finally debuted it. And then, you know, lo and behold, a few years later, it's time for Jason to finally, you know, graduate. And what happened then, Jason?
Well, after we won our Telly Awards for We're Ordinary People, you know, it was time for me to leave Hofstra University because I completed the film and my professors had agreed it was technologically and story-wise it was sound enough for me to receive an MFA. So I graduated, and I that summer that I had left Hofstra University, you know, I said, well, how am I going to premiere this film? I was working on how to market it, and I started repeating actions. I started walking in and out of doors. I started doing multiple things certain times a day. For example, if I pulled out my bed, because I sleep on a pull-out bed, if I pulled it out, I pull it back in. I started repeating myself, repeating actions. I said, well, what the hell is wrong with me? And it got so bad to the point where I was, oh, my God, I can't control it. I was literally walking in and out of doors. I was putting on my shoes like 10 times a day, on and off, on and off, on and off, repeating. I would literally, when I would go to sleep, I would get up from the bed and get back on. And I did that one night for 55 times in a row.
It got so bad we couldn't hang out because he couldn't leave the house.
I couldn't leave the house. I could not leave my house. And I was wondering what in God's name is this thing? And I went to a therapist that my our priest had recommended, because we're both Catholic and we were members of the Newman Club at Queens College. And I went to our priest there, and he recommended a therapist to me because he said maybe this is a psychological disorder. And he was right. It was obsessive compulsive disorder. And that was the beginning of a true nightmare for me, because I couldn't, it was like having, I guess it's like the David Banner explanation, it's like having a demon inside you. You know, you can't control your own actions anymore. Your anxiety has become your king of your life. And so I just couldn't leave my house. I just asked him, I said, who do you think can help me? And he recommended Mount Sinai, because he said my OCD was so aggressive, he couldn't treat me because I'd need specialized therapy. And so he recommended me to Mount Sinai, and I went through a whole year of behavioral therapy for this aggressive OCD. And I actually, they're able to measure you on a scale now out of 50 how OCD you are. And I actually was a 46 out of, actually it's out of 40. It's a 36 out of 40. So I was very aggressive. I was 4 points away from being completely obsessive.
In other words, worse than Monk.
Yeah. Almost worse than Monk. Yeah, worse than Monk.
But you put that towards your film and you got yourself a good editor.
Well, that's true, right.
But it took me a year to get over it and, you know, do therapy. And, you know, I entered the workforce. I had to get myself a regular job, like Anthony did, to support my filmmaking. And that's when he came to me and said, look, man, it's time. You know, you got to put your stuff in the awards, you know?
No, it's funny because I was very supportive during the time because he was supportive when I broke my arm and had surgery. So when people ask me, well, what was your job as the producer, it really advanced throughout the project. At first, it was just support for him, you know, just as mental, you know, like, you can do this, you can do this. And then it became, all right, well, I need equipment. So I would come over and I'd bring equipment and help him, you know, shoot and, you know, the project. But by this point in the film process, it was, okay, I'm coming to your house and we're going to get this on television. We're going to sign these papers and I'm going to the TV station and we're going to get this on the air. And we did.
That's great. Well, I guess I'll get to see it tonight. And by the way, I'm a Queens College graduate.
Congratulations.
Oh, great. Congratulations.
What year? I'm sorry. What major? What were you...
No, I'm way before. I graduated in like 71. Communication Arts and Sciences was the title of it at that time.
Okay.
All right.
So I took in all aspects there with the TV and, you know, all of that. Get in
Same
front
here.
Of the camera,
I,
get
I was...
behind the camera. You know.
Mm-hmm. Same you here. Know.
Yeah, same
do some
with us.
Theater, do whatever. Whatever it took to get me the hell out of there. That's what. That's all I went in. I said, "What do you want to major in?" And I looked down the list. I said, "This looks like the easiest thing for me to major in." That's it. I'll take this, and I don't really care because I'm going to be a comedian no matter what.
I found that a lot of people felt that way. Like, I'm going to take this because it's easy, but once you really get into it, it changes your life. Like, I view the world differently because of Queens College and that program. You know?
Well, yeah, but it's like going into show business as a comedian, there's nothing there that will teach you that. There's nothing technical to deal with.
Yeah,
except for the crazy people that are around you.
Yes, that's true.
That's so true.
Because
your whole entire team.
There's so many people you can observe, and they're like, "Why did he do that?"
Yeah, this is true.
Yeah,
that's what got me out of show business. I got to a point. I said, "I think I had enough of crazies. I have no idea what I'm going to do." And I don't know why, I just found myself suddenly writing. I went, oh, well, that was my worst subject. Let's see what I can do with it. Now I'm writing for 6 hard copy newspapers, have 3 blogs, and a radio show. You just never know.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I started out with Queens College, and I was very shy about, you know, even doing production work. And I'd say production.
He would tell me these grand old ideas, right? He's like, I want to do this, and I want to do this, and I'm going to do it when I'm in graduate school. And I said, wait a minute. You have these opportunities now in Queens College.
Yeah.
You should take it now.
Yeah,
yeah,
right.
I mean,
that's true.
It got me out of my shell, though. The production classes I took got me out of my shell.
Oh, good.
And that's why I went to Hofstra, because I was out of it, and I said, you know what? Let me try my hand at field production. Let me try my hand at documentary. Let's extend what I can do, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that'll do it for you.
And I just got into New York Institute of Technology. This is going to be my second year. And the journey just to get into grad school was, you know, amazing. But I'm enjoying it.
Okay.
Yeah, I enjoyed my time with grad school. And I just have to say that this was a wonderful journey to take. And he had just mentioned Andrew Bauman from Spotlight Autism. Well, the two subjects in the film are Drinking with Bob, who has appeared on different news stories and has his own YouTube show. His name is Bob Thompson, if you want to check him out. Drinking with Bob, that's his show. It's a wonderful show. He actually, I would say, he's a master of ranting into the camera. He's a comedian himself. And he talks about different topics, politics, news,
and
things like that.
And he was really the perfect subject. If you want to talk about using public access television for the your First Amendment freedom of speech rights, he is a perfect person to go to, because he's, you know, he starts out really slow and then he gets really aggressive into the camera expressing his anger.
And if you want to talk about the other side of public access, which is the community service side, Andrew Bauman was a great idea, because there's even one time where I showed it in the film. He had two sons, and one of them had autism, and he brought on one of his sons, the one without autism, and he did a show about how siblings can help their autistic counterparts, can help their autistic siblings. So how can a brother with an autistic sister help raise her,
right?
You know, and he talked to his son. How do you relate to your autistic brother? How do you, you know, what are the things that you do to help him? And he's even helping his own son out as a father. So he's an interviewer and a father, and that's what his whole show is about: how families can help their children who are autistic. You know,
right? Well,
how can they help raise them?
Well, let me go back to you guys. What is your next project?
Well,
Anthony, take that away. I think you've got a great project coming up.
We are doing a radio, like an audio-based documentary based on a gay and disabled activist by the name of Harry Weider. And Harry Weider passed away about 4 years ago now. And we've been working on this project for a few years, and we're in the process of making a website for it. So
okay.
That's one of our projects. A second project is we're doing a third episode of We're Ordinary People, which is going to be about visually impaired artists. We've been in contact with two different artists who are also teachers and have some sort of visual impairment, to show that the arts are not just, you know, that blind people can, you know, be artists. And our final project that we're working on is we are doing a self-portrait of Jason and his OCD. And within that story, we are going to just tell our story about how we were Queens College kids and now we're where we're at right now.
Oh, okay. And so if people go to www.what?
If they go to YouTube and they search Anthony Saldana, they'll see his
If you put his name into the search engine.
Yes.
Yes.
I also have a carbon made portfolio website.
Okay.
That will forward you to all of our projects as well. I believe it's Anthony Saldana at www.carbonmade.com.
Okay, got it. Yeah, because I have to gotta end the show. do a quick,
wrap
what do you
up.
Call it? A sponsor thing before I end it.
Well,
so,
I'm looking to get some brownies because you got.
Yeah,
brownies.
I heard about
oh,
those
God.
Brownies.
Oh God, and I
got
to tell you, honest to God, I've tried brownies, all kinds of brownies, and I go, yeah, this is good. These are the most unbelievable brownies. It's like, swear to God, it's like eating fudge.
Oh, my God. Where are they? Where can I get these brownies? Jeez.
And you
got to
go.
I love chocolate.
You got to go to brownies.com. They don't sell them in the stores unless you're on the West Coast.
Okay.
All right.
Go to brownies.com.
You're going to get me some brownies.
Well, Jason, make sure you order, like the ones that are less calories.
Yeah,
well,
yeah. Thank you very much for pointing out my weight problem on the Law Talk Radio.
Well, I do. It's very hard to,
I take
know,
as
okay.
many jabs as I can.
but what I can say, it order, they come in all different flavors and stuff.
Oh,
personally,
nice.
Personally, for me, either give me the chocolate or the ones with chocolate chips in it.
Oh, I completely
agree. Chocolate chips are the best. I love that.
Yeah,
I mean,
amazing.
They have, and it's they're using Belgian chocolates.
Oh my
Ooh.
God, that just
so
did
this
it.
So this is the whole thing. Now wait a minute.
I think
the
I'm
killer,
gonna
the killer was that, and they stopped doing this. They were also making these smaller brownies dipped in Belgian chocolate.
Dipped?
Yes.
Calm
oh
down,
my
Jason.
God.
Calm
oh,
down.
God.
I think you're more...
because I
oh, you need to calm
right.
down,
so
my
go
friend.
Brownies.
You can't eat
go
those brownies. I think you're allergic,
that's
remember?
See, I've been trying to keep it quiet for the last minute and a half, but I'm lactose intolerant.
Yes. You can't
so
enjoy
this is,
brownies
this is,
like,
this is
like
way
I can.
Too much temptation for my ears.
Oh, okay. Now that we talk so much about it, now I got to email a person and say, okay, I need a new batch. they don't really like to send, they usually don't like to send it to me during the summertime because, you know, they're coming from the West Coast and they're not putting it in refrigerated things. You know, so the summertime.
Either way,
I
still think it would taste good.
Oh,
I
good.
Think so too.
Yeah. Anyway. Oh, well, I appreciate the two of you coming on the show. And
thank
I'm
you
looking
for having
forward
us.
To
Thank
seeing
you.
The documentary. And I'll let you know also when the, you know, when it's in print, when the article is in print.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much, Merle.
Thank you.
Well, have a great day.
You too.
Yeah, well, I have at least three articles to do today, so. Yes, that's going to be fun. Okie dokies. I won't have anything, no sugar today.
I tell myself that every day. But
I start off with that promise every single day, and I completely
yeah, I
fall apart by 5 p.m.
I know. Uh-huh. I keep thinking, because I don't have bread in the house, that'll make a difference. Nope, doesn't.
No.
I swear I'm going to be making chocolate pudding from scratch.
That's everyone who offers it to you. The fact is you swear you're not going to do it. Some douchebag will come up to you. Oh, you know what I got? I got this great Swiss chocolate. Oh, my God. You had to say it. You just had to come up to me and eat it in front of my face, you know?
And especially when I was going through that, you know, I'm lactose intolerant now phase. It was like a 12-step program. This is I can't eat cheese now. It's like, okay, I can't eat pizza. I can't eat cheeseburgers. I can't eat lasagna. And every day someone's eating cheese right in front of me. So it certainly is a 12-step process.
Okay. Well, I got to end the show. So, and I'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Yep. All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Merle.
And have a great day.
You too.
Thank you. You too. Bye.